Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. After an incredible weekend where the Crusaders went to 0-5, the Hurricanes 5-5, an incredible table, Super Rugby, all sorts of upsets, the Force beating the Reds, it has been an immense weekend. The Drua versus the Waratahs are incredible games. Really a wonderful weekend of rugby. So much to talk about in the show today. Got some great viewer questions, and as part of the show this week, best viewer question out in New Zealand gets a Billboard Rugby Ball, courtesy of Player Sports. So thank you very much for helping the show out and giving the viewers something to get for their incredible questions. We'll get to your YouTube and email questions, and we'll talk a little bit about tipping later on in the show as well as Opicky. But first, let's introduce the two guys off the back of the Blues Crusaders game. Going to go first to James Parsons. The smile is rather large, Jibber.
Well, I mean, it's rather large because I've had a long, long time, obviously in despair. So it was great to see the Blues deliver. More importantly, it was great to see a team deliver for their skip. I thought Paddy was outstanding in his first game back to go 80 minutes, and the boys really got behind him.
And then there's Bryn Hall.
Ross, I think we need to change the opening bulletin. Every time you go, the Crusaders are this, Crusaders are that. I think we should change it, the dynamic. He's actually playing really well against the Crusaders. But yes, It was a tough watch. I think this one was probably the toughest to watch, and we'll go in a little bit more. But yeah, credit to the Blues and obviously their performance. They probably should have actually won a lot more with the amount of points that they left out there in that second half. But yeah, thoroughly deserved. And unfortunately, the Crusaders continue beyond that big fat zero.
Okay, let's start positive then for you, Bryn. Jibba, what did you like the most about the way the Blues managed to keep the Crusaders winless?
I think when Dalton got yellow carded, I think that period was very, very important. And defending and holding them out. So often, I think when the Crusaders have done really well against us, and when I was playing, is they'd take those threes early, they'd really build that scoreboard pressure and then look to sort of wear you down. Whereas when they went to the corner, you know, you sort of felt when Dalton got yellow carded, it's like, man, if they get a try here, it almost could ignite them. And the fact they didn't, I think that was massive. And I just think their defence, although they had the majority of the ball, I think the defence is becoming a strength, and we know that that's crucial leading into the pointy end of the season.
Yeah, it is, and I think, you know, it's a bit of a baptism of fire, unfortunately, for a lot of those young men that are playing. You know, George Bell, 21, Taylor Cahill's 21, Jamie Hannah, who had a really good performance, 21, and, you know, as Jip knows, when it comes to the forward pack, and especially in line-out, having that seniority and experience is really important in big games and understanding situationally what's required. So it just doesn't come back to one individual person. It's a collective group. And obviously, with them being really young, they're getting, unfortunately, a pretty good introduction to Super Rugby and what it takes to, I guess, win these games. But I think one thing that, I guess, was a little bit concerning for the Crusaders was their defense. I don't think I've seen them miss that many tackles in a period of game for a long, long time. And, you know, that's unfortunate. I know the Blues have a lot of X factor, and they in themselves attacked very well for long periods of that game. But, you know, that's one thing that I think Crusaders fans and I guess the boys will be pretty gutted about, with the amount of missed tackles and I guess the defenders beat. And you look at all the stats, you know, 44-8, you know, that's a pretty telling stat in terms of what attacking abilities of how much pressure they put the Blues on. And I guess it just shows where, I guess, the attack of where the Crusaders are, having eight defenders beaten within an 80-minute performance, is pretty concerning as well. So it just seems that there's a lot of areas that they aren't getting right in against the Blues, unfortunately. There are a lot of areas that they didn't get right in. Like I said before, and Jip, you could probably agree with this, the scoreboard probably could have been a lot worse if the Blues were able to score a few more tries in the back end of that second half.
Yeah, and saying that, though, like, when you look at it, yeah, they tackled at 83%. They had 221 tackles. But it could have been worse. Like, there was 59 breakdowns in the 22 for the Blues. Multiple visits, I think it was around 11 visits for two tries. Like, you know, like, you could look at their defence statistically and go, oh, geez, it's quite bad. But actually, on the whole, it was pretty impressive, the way they held on. And had Levi Almoor got that try, you know, like, that's a momentum swing. And I suppose things that we've seen in particular, Richie Moana do, like, he has these try-saving tackles that keep you guys galvanised and in the game. And Caleb Clark came up with one of those, and I think that was a big turning point.
The Crusaders spent a lot of time in the Blues 22 in the first 15 minutes, Brennan. We spent a lot of time recently talking about turning, like Jip says, those entries into points. Why do you think they struggled so much when they were kicking to the corner, going for those drives and just couldn't execute?
Like, there were six lineouts in the first half and they lost five, you know. So when you be able to try and accumulate that moment, that pressure, and you're giving that valve off, you know, when you get into that 22 metres, and which isn't the first time that we're talking about this with the Crusaders, unfortunately, they aren't able to sustain that pressure for long periods of time, especially with set piece. You know, you're accustomed to knowing when they get into that 22, especially in line-out mauls, if there's specials as well around the transition or front peels, or just, you know, grafting, getting into your working and being able to score with multi-phases. They're not able to do that at this moment. So I think you're right, Ross, you know, with Dalton Papali'i, you know, getting that sin bin and then dominating that first 10 minutes with position and territory, not being able to score points, I think, you know, somewhat galvanised, I think, the Blues, and being able to, I guess, not get that scoreboard pressure. And then I think the big play, I think, in the first half was, you know, the not straight by George Bell, and then with the Willie Hines yellow card, which in turn ends up being 14 points with him off the field, you know. So, and then Seve Reese going off straight away. So that first half, and then not being able to score those points, it could have been different if they were able to score in those moments. But like I said, from that flow-on effect of the sin bins and then the two tries after that, the Blues just kind of went over the top. And like I said, it's a baptism of fire for a lot of those young guys at the moment.
Jip, let's dig into your experience. There's a failing line out. You've got to fix it as a team. How do you go about that as a hooker and jumpers coming together and figuring out a way forward, especially when the five-man continued to fail?
The one thing the Crusaders always do is, and previously they've planned for the what-ifs, and maybe that just wasn't there. I do think they went to it late in the game. You watched, they did the overthrow. They didn't really use the line-out. They overthrew to the midfield coming onto it. But the irony is, there was a final not so long ago at Eden Park, yeah, where the Crusaders put on a clinic at line-out, and you saw the same sort of struggles for a young Blues team. You know, experience does matter. I do think that, like, you look at Jamie Hanna, like, that was an amazing game he had. Like, 30 tackles, 10 carries, you know, a magnitude of rucks. But, you know, you build experience through knowledge, and, you know, through failures, you'll be better for it. And I do think this young Crusaders pack will be much better for it out the back end. I know it won't feel it now. I've been there with Arat. It's definitely not easy, and you overthink, and you maybe, you know, catastrophize and think it's, you know, unsolvable. But, you know, without the yellow card, she was pretty tight. There was a 10 to 12 minute period there. It was the same against the Hurricanes. You know, when it's just not going your way, it's not going your way. And, yeah, look, I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but having been there myself, I know the amount of effort. You just got to look at Dave Havili's face when he's going to interview after the game. You can see the intensity, and almost the harder you try, the worse it gets in these situations, which sounds cliche, but it is a reality.
Bryn, they've obviously got guys to come back. They've got a game this week, then the bye, and then after that we're expecting to see Barrett, Blackadder, Williams, Taylor, Burke all come back. Looking at that, and, you know, being a guy who has his cup half full, do you see the Crusaders being able to make their way through the draw they've got to get into the top eight from here?
Not too sure what's going to happen with the Chiefs this week, but after the bye, you know, they haven't left themselves a lot of wiggle room. They're going to have to get the results pretty quickly. And I guess the pleasing fact is a lot of those big names are coming back, and especially in the forward pack. Like I talked around the numbers around how young that forward pack is. Anytime you can get the experience of a Blackadder, you know, Quinton Strange coming back, Scooter, Scott Barrett, he's not coming after the bye, but, you know, those kind of caliber players slowly coming back in. They really just need to try and pick up wins after the bye. And I think Fergus Burke is a big part of that as well, with him being able to have a bit more experience in that playmaker role, which they're lacking a little bit at the moment. And that's not to say Riley Hohepa isn't doing well. Played very well on the weekend. I think defensively did a lot of great efforts in terms of what Jip was talking around when Richie would make big plays defensively. He did a lot of that on the weekend. I thought he's played really well for a second start. But when you get a guy like Fergus Burke back, understanding what's required, it's only going to help that Crusaders team, hopefully, to kick on and grab those quarterfinal spots.
And looking into that crystal ball of yours 9 or 10 weeks away, if let's say the table was similar and the Hurricanes were top of the table and the Crusaders were going to Sky Stadium, which team do you think is going to be most nervous about that particular matchup?
The Crusaders won't have anything to lose. I think when where they are, they're not considered the favourites right now. You know, they're not going to finish in the top four. They're going to finish, you know, in the eighth position. And if anything, they can just go out and swing as hard as they want, knowing it's a free hit. All the pressure will be on the Hurricanes if they finish first or whoever it may be. And I can tell you right now, if you're sitting first, would you want to play a Crusaders team coming in eighth with all that cavalry coming back? Just me personally, I probably wouldn't. I could probably ask you that. You know, would you want to play a Crusaders team with all that cavalry coming back, or would you rather play another team in that eighth position?
I think that finals experience is massive, but from what I saw of the opportunities given to those Hurricanes players on Friday night, man, they're getting a lot of competition at training. Like, they hit the ground running. They haven't played a lot of rugby, those players that went out there Friday night. And Brent, you can talk to this, man. Your guys' squad depth was just immaculate when you went on the title run. I think the Hurricanes are very well placed. And you look at the enthusiasm to want to start and be in that 23. Man, they're going to be a tough side to beat, the Hurricanes.
54-28 win over Bryn's Rebels. Probably for me, the standout in that, Bryn, was Harry Godfrey. Like, this kid has it all. I mean, they've got depth there at fullback. They've got a lot of it, but this kid looks the business.
Well, he does. He's pretty similar to Ruben Love, I think. You know, similar stature, and I guess the skill set that we're probably accustomed to seeing with young guys coming through, with Ruben and obviously Godfrey, who on the weekend has all that skill set, I think, of a Ruben Love. Great distribution game, has a bit of speed, and obviously has had a great start to his domestic career with the Wellington and the Hurricanes. So, yeah, I think the depth that squad's building, we talk around winning championships and being able to win depth. You know, when you've got a guy like Ruben Love, who we thought was probably the form fullback, and you've got a guy like Harry Godfrey, who's, you know, second and behind, playing with performances like that. Haven't even touched on TJ Petanata and how he played with this first game coming back after a massive injury. So, yeah, the competitiveness within that group. You'd hate to be a coach, but at the same time, you'd love to be a coach, knowing that there's a lot of players putting their hand up and knowing that depth come at the back end of the year. You've got to have your whole squad firing, and the Hurricanes are certainly doing that after their performance in Palmerston North on the weekend.
What impresses me most is the Hurricane system. Like, he has been in the pipeline for a long time, and they haven't rushed him. He's had touch points when needed through COVID. But what I like is his biggest development was his ability to sort of demand the ball, you know, lead people around, have that courage in the air. And we saw all that and then some. And I suppose the other thing is catching up with him afterwards. He's very modest. Like, he was, I think the whole Hurricane squad, like every interaction I've had with them after games, they feel their ceiling is a lot higher than where they're at the moment. And that just breeds that sort of competitive edge during the week. But Harry definitely made a statement. And I think it just shows the importance of not rushing that young talent in to Super Rugby, because it is pretty ruthless. And he's had the ability to learn at training, and then that's given him the best opportunity to execute when he's been given that opportunity.
Player development's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because then on the other side of it, you look at Cole Forbes coming on for the Blues, 25 years old, went overseas at 21 for a couple of years to Scotland, made his way back, and after a couple of years in NPC is now come on to the Blues and looked $1 million in that game. It is a bizarre thing. It's not an art form, is it? Development. It happens at different times.
It's not. And as human beings, we are unique, each individual. But I think the one thing about Cole is regular game time and the opportunity he's had at Bay of Plenty. Like, he was really impressive. First game I saw him was against Auckland, when they probably should have won. Auckland came back, Zane Sullivan kicked the penalty late to win it. But it was his tactical kicking, and I think he's got a great balance and sense for the game of when to inject his skill set on attack, but also his ability to kick and find space. And look, I'm not a kicker, but I always used to hear Mick Byrne go, if a kick can bounce twice, you've probably made the right decision, and you've given the chase line that time to sort of get up. And probably 9 times out of 10 from when Cole kicks tactically, that happens. So I just think his game knowledge and that little bit more experience maybe overseas has probably improved his kicking, and his natural game is that attack. He's a great balance, especially coming on early, man. Like, a lot of people have been like, Zane Sullivan going off, he's quite a key cog to that Blues team, both attack and defence. He made a big statement, probably a bigger statement than he was expected.
You know, we talked around Amoni Narawa last year in terms of, like, you know, his growth and where he was able to have a big season and how many kind of years that he had to fine-tune his game and, I guess, mature and understanding what's required as an outside back. And, you know, that's exactly the same for Forbes in terms of, you know, going away from here and being able to experience another style of rugby and then being able to come back more mature and, I guess, an understanding of what you might be as a player. And, you know, look at him on the weekend, you know, his defenders beaten was the best in the Blues. And I think the tactical nous, which I think is required as a fullback, is going to be really important. And you talk around Zane Sullivan and his kicking game, you know, he can do that as well. So that pivot, second pivot role, which the Blues run with Perifetta and Sullivan, you won't lose much when it comes to Forbes. So, yeah, I think some players are given the opportunity very young in terms of opportunities or just being able to mature quicker. And in terms, you know, obviously Forbes has been given an opportunity later at a later start, and now you're reaping the rewards of, I guess, that experience of experiencing something different. Then also the system in turn of what the Blues are curating, you can have performances like you did on the weekend with how their environment is at this stage.
The biggest challenge for Cole and Harry Godfrey now is they're not the unknown. They've had big statement games, and that's where Super Rugby gets really tough. So having that ability to, evolve their game and manipulate what people think they're going to do and do something else would be crucial.
Just going to our first viewer question. Now, we've had this one in the pocket for a few weeks now, waiting for the right time to use it. Please send us your questions on aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz or within the YouTube comment section. This one came from YouTube, from Charles Wandery 7737. He says, you guys should question the talent identification process in New Zealand, seeing as 3 players from your shores have been selected in an England squad this Six Nations without having had a chance at Super Rugby. Josh Josefa-Scott, Ethan Roots and Chandler Cunningham Smith. Chipper, should we be questioning our processes based on those things?
Well, Ethan Roots plays the Crusaders and the Māori All Blacks, so he was a pretty late starter with his MMA background, and, you know, I think he made a pretty good fist of it. Bryn, you'll know more than me, but my time at Harbour, he was always a talent. But the opportunity just didn't present. You know, there's a lot of loose forwards in and around, and he couldn't pick up a thing. So, I mean, there's only so many spots. I don't think it's drastic. I don't. I think Ethan's game really suits the way they play in the North. Like, he is a combative guy. He goes direct, and they just slept on different standards. It doesn't mean that he's been missed. Like, he was definitely acknowledged as being extremely, you know, strong in New Zealand, but his opportunity and the way he plays is better presented for him up in the North, and he's loving it.
Sometimes different environments and different places can bring out the best of other players. You look at Jamison Gibson-Park and James Lowe, guys that were on that borderline of making the All Blacks, or some to an extent probably weren't in line. You go to another country and excel and being able to upskill yourself, and you, now you're looking at them and being a part of one of the best players in the world. So there's both sides of the coin, I believe, when it comes to that.
There is one thing I'll add to that, Ross, that I probably didn't articulate well enough, is the balance for race for talent. Like, you know, that young talent and potentially how we can potentially still inspire that young generation of feeling included and on the pathway, and being able to lock up that sort of 23 to 28 year old player that may have taken a longer time to develop. I don't have the answer, but it is hard for clubs in terms of that race of talent at that young age that are sort of that under 20 superstar, don't want them to leave, you know, and they may take up a spot that an Ethan Roots could fit and he could deliver at Super Rugby now, but you take the younger player because you don't want to lose him to potentially another region and so forth. So I do think there is a balance and consideration potentially to look at there. As I say, I don't have the answer, but that is an element. Is he better placed to play super versus someone else? But we need to lock that talent up. Do you know what I mean?
So we're a small country with a limited amount of money, and you've got to make solid choices in that time for what's best for you. You can't choose both. That's the situation the Super Rugby clubs are in.
Yes, but what I'm trying to say is, can we get creative to be able to serve both purposes?
You know, the only other way you could think about it is you open it up. You know, they're able to, give contracts to guys and being able to go play overseas and being able to then come back, which we don't do here in New Zealand, which other teams do in the world. So, not too sure how we'd do that, but yeah, that's how I find it.
There's no reason you can't. Is there an ability for clubs to have a relationship? Like we saw the Crusaders go north. Is there an ability to have a relationship where maybe players in that sort of younger are signed to a Crusaders, but they go to a Munster for a couple of years? And, you know, like if you look at Carl Tuinokrafi as an example, he went to France because his opportunities weren't here. But he came back from France a hell of a lot better scrummager and became a test. You know, so is there a way that it can work for everyone? You know, in terms of clubs down here, but also up there, I'm not too sure. But can we get more creative? Potentially.
NZR dabbled with that a few years ago, didn't they? They signed some sort of deal with Harlequins, but I don't think anything really ever came of that. You know, there was something made of it at the time, but it never really came to fruition with the chance for people to go play there.
Maybe they were onto something. You know, is it something we need to revisit in terms of the pipeline of our talent?
I feel like the only way that could happen, and this is very, very left field and it would never happen, but, you know, if there was no NPC, for example, and it got scrapped, you know, then you'd have the opportunity to go. I'm just thinking.
Edit that out. Wash your mouth out. I don't want to hear that. Mate, you're on 90-something games. You're coming back. You need the NPC to be up and running. You want to get your hand in.
No, I'm just playing devil's advocate, but just thinking about more outside the box of how it could actually happen. You know, if there was no NPC, then you'd have to be able to then give guys opportunities to go overseas and then come back and play Super Rugby if that was a possibility. That's just thinking very much. Do I want that to happen? I don't want that to happen. But that's obviously what we're talking about conversation.
Let's get more creative than that, Bryn. We're better than that. We'll find a way. We've got to keep Harbour alive, mate.
Is this where private ownership of Super Rugby clubs could come into it, maybe? Where private businessmen own these clubs and then can strike up relationships with foreign clubs that they might also own? You know, you see that through football. No. You see that in other sports all the time. IPL, IPL franchises own Caribbean League franchises, etc.
I think we've got to put the teams of... This is my personal opinion. You put the teams of black at the top and then you work back. How are we best to serve that and the club and make it work for everyone? I think you do want, I suppose, NZR to have quite a bit of say in where people go and so forth, in particular the All Black coaches, the Black Ferns coaches, Sevens coaches and so forth. If you lose that control, like where do we go to in terms of selection and so forth? That step may make other steps accelerate.
Couldn't you write that in as part of a license, though, if you were to do it?
Potentially. Yeah, I mean, you can write anything in a contract.
Yeah.
You know, you can. I just think, I mean, we're thinking on the spot here, so I just need a good amount of time to just think about the what-ifs before answering that. But, I mean, as I just said before, there's always a way that we can try and get creative to make it work.
Ross, and I just want to make sure that
just I'm not going get rid of
around this. I do not want to scrap. I do not want to scrap. I do not want to scrap the NPC. I love the NPC. So just making it for arguments case.
Yeah.
And I talked around that being an option. But no, I love the NPC and do not want it to go. Make it very clear.
2024 Bryn Hall, eh? Making the big calls and then winding it back.
Oh, I don't need that. I've already had enough heat.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk a little bit about the talent that is on the way up, because we've had some questions through from our viewers about that. Let's start with one from Germany, Jacob Hafeland, who sent through an email. Obviously, as a German rugby enthusiast, you can imagine who he's pushing as a possible All Black. Anton Segner at the Marcos and Blues. He's been watching him closely. He feels he has the potential to be an All Black. Jipper, where do you feel he sits right now within the selection quandary?
I think I totally agree he's got the potential. And I certainly know one of the All Black coaches is a very big fan of his, and Leon McDonald. He knows him very well from Tasman and the Blues. The hard thing, I've been asked a lot lately about where Scott Robinson's at, but until he selects his first squad, it's quite hard. I'm a little unsure, but currently he probably is more looking at that All Blacks 15 spot to sort of prove at that level. And if I use the Waratahs game as an example, whether it's minute one, minute 18, minute 80, game on the line, he backs his skill set and decision making around the breakdown in terms of his defensive turnovers. That takes a lot more courage than he makes look like, because, I mean, you could be on the other side of giving a penalty away that loses the game. So he does have complete belief in his skill set, which is massive in the professional sports arena, in my opinion.
And for those international fans who don't know a lot about Anton Segner, young German kid, was playing rugby in high school in Germany, thought he'd have a crack in New Zealand, came to New Zealand, went through the high school system, and here we are. We've got a German kid in the All Black conversation. I suppose Fabian Holland from the Netherlands is also a similar kind of story. So the reach of Super Rugby is quite impressive, the fact that these kids are coming out of these countries and wanting to play rugby in non-traditional rugby countries is very, very impressive. We've got another question. This is a piece of talent who's probably on the opposite end of the scale, maybe more in that setup we were talking about before, as they get older and might get missed out. View a question from Andrew Brody, and he's obviously a Hurricanes fan because he said, go the mighty Canes, which, you know, you can actually really say quite seriously now. So he says, question for James, do you think Isaiah Walker-Leawede has potential to play for the ABs? I can't believe he never seems to be in the public conversation at lock.
Oh, I think that's probably a little unfair. Like, he's made the All Blacks 15. He's definitely in the conversation. I think his work rate is statistically absolutely. He's physical, he's strong ball in hand, he's strong defensively. He moves bodies really well around the breakdown. I think he's getting better and better in the lineout in terms of his ability to sort of get in there quick defensively and attack. So, there's no doubt he'll be in the frame. He is such a physical presence, and he's the sort of body that you know will fit in at international level with ease.
Andrew Brody, who sent in that question about Isaiah Walker-Leawede, heading your way. The Gilbert Ball, brought to you by Player Sports. Thanks to both of those companies for helping us with the giveaway. Sam Whitelock, he's in France at Pau. The story during the week was that he could well be coming back to help the All Blacks in some capacity as a squad member. You know, obviously, incredible experience, former All Black captain, arguably our greatest ever lock. Bringing a guy back like that who's 35 years old, why is...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is that necessary when you look at the makeup of the New Zealand scene right now, Bryn?
Oh, this has just got razor's imprints all over it, I think. Just knowing what Sam can do on and off the field is just so invaluable. Yes, he's obviously got the accolades of being able to be the most test All Black that we've ever had here. But in his time, I remember at the Crusaders, the amount of stuff that's done behind the scenes with guys that aren't playing. And let's just say for argument's sake, Sam doesn't end up being the starting lock, which we've been accustomed to see. But the conversations that he'll be able to have behind closed doors with the young guys coming through, the standard of what it is to be an All Black, what your preparation looks like, the conversations between coaches and players, all that stuff that goes behind the scenes, as Sam Whitelock did for the Crusaders and probably did it at All Black level, and it's something that Razor really trusted Sam with doing when he was at the Crusaders. So just knowing Ray, that's one of the reasons why he'd want to have him back. Yes, obviously he's going to be still a great player, but the behind the scenes and what the world class looks like every single day and what he can do for that environment. I remember a guy named Tim Bateman, who was in and around our environment, didn't play a lot of games, would only play a handful through the 3 years that he was there. But the stuff that he did behind the scenes makes us win championships. And, he isn't a guy that you talk around. You talk around, obviously, Richie Mwanga, Sam Whitelock and all those guys, Scott Barrett. But the stuff that Tim Bateman did behind the scenes led to us winning championships and was huge for the guys off the field. So I can see a similar place for what Sam will do. Yes, he'll probably play a little bit more, but the behind-the-scenes stuff will be so massive for that All Black environment. Knowing Razor and what's required will be massive for him, I believe, if he does come back.
Mate, you missed one name off that list, Bryn Hall. That's what I talk about, those 7 titles.
Certainly wasn't me, mate.
Sam Whitelock for you, Jipper, when you look at what he can bring, and if you're bringing him back as a player but sounding more like a player coach, why wouldn't you just bring him back as a coach? Why do you need a player on the training field?
Player coach, he's been doing that for years. There's one thing, sort of doing the coaching aspect, but he can deliver. 35, tight forward. If he wants to do it, then I think it'll be an asset. The key is just getting the balance right, that you're not disincentivizing others. But I think you just can't buy experience. And I think you use the weekend as an example. That experience, you look at the Hurricanes, and yes, they don't have like a million, 100 cappers, but they have guys that have been in Super Rugby for 5 to 7 years throughout that whole squad. And it's no different to when the Crusaders were successful over the last 6 years, whole squad. Not necessarily needing to play, has the ability to play, that voice of reason, I suppose, that calm nature, being there, done it, can empower, motivate others. If you have the ability to do it, I just don't know why you wouldn't.
From what I've heard, Bryn, Sam's a real details man, right down to his lunchbox. Is that he comes in with a packed lunch, his banana, a peeled carrot, everything is ready to rock and roll. That dude knows his detail.
He's definitely a red dot. He's more so, he is detailed to a certain extent, and obviously you don't be successful without being detailed, but he's a very red dotted man, being able to say this is the way we're going if there's any bit of fluffiness. And I think sometimes as a leader, you need that, and Sam's able to do that as well. So, and I think again, his relationship with Razor, let's not underestimate the work that they've done together and how much trust that he does have in Sam. And I guess whether we know this is true or not, I know the connection that those two have will be really beneficial for the All Blacks and the Locks as well, being able to help them to the next cycle of the World Cup, or just in the short term.
I suppose that's an interesting part of this, Jippe. It's setting up the culture the way that Razor wants the culture set up. Even if you're just going to bring a guy in for a couple of years, setting that up well at the start.
It's a four-year plan, isn't it, I suppose? And if there needs to be a transition, and I just have to overemphasise what Bryn said before, the work during the week, you just can't. Yeah. You can't put a price on that. Maybe they can if they can buy them back. But, But like someone of his experience in and around the group. I mean, you saw even last year the way that the All Blacks built when Liam Neeson, Kevin Mialamu, Conrad Smith, Richie McCaw get into that environment. And Sam still the ability to play. And you're playing South Africa. You know, like you look at the calendar, there's those sorts of experiences and being able to empower and give comfort to players that may be playing in that atmosphere for the first time. It's one thing a coach saying it, but player to player, that's a lot of power. Yeah. In those conversations.
Yeah. So that's a really important point there. Ross, just to come back to your question of saying, why would you not just have him as a coach? The stuff that you get on the field within trainings, you just don't get as you do as a coach. If you take that step away, you're away from the players, that's not that same connection. You can have a conversation on the field or at a coffee or at a dinner. It becomes a little bit, you know, players and then management and the coaches to end up being obviously on the management side. So I think coming back as a coach, you probably wouldn't get the same results if you bring him back as just a player with that, I guess, overall kind of coaching mindset in terms of being able to upskill preparation, what it looks like every single day if they're going to bring in younger locks or guys that aren't as experienced in that environment.
If he did come back next year, Bryn, he could have a chance to play the Lions because we've seen this week the announcement of this game in Adelaide where a combined Anzac team, New Zealand and Australia, will take on a Lions side in July next year. Now, I suppose there's two things to this. Like, one, is it a kind of a Clayton's Anzac team because actually all of the top test players are going to be involved in their squads, so who plays for this team?
I'd just love to know what the criteria would actually be, though. Because I think if you're bringing around that point, but then does it open up the opportunity to be able to bring guys from other parts of the world, like a Japan?
Oh, here we go.
He's just
here we go. Someone wants to play the Lions.
I will not be playing in that squad. That's for sure. From myself in Japan, you've got a guy called Aaron Smith who's playing good rugby over here, so he'd get a call up before me. That's for sure. But you know, I'm not too sure the criteria. Do you have an understanding of what that criteria would be?
I think it's yet to be worked out, to be honest. I think the game's been announced and that details to be worked out. I have rung Justin Harrison and just said, look, the Aotearoa Rugby Pod would love to be on site in Adelaide. and he's pretty confident he can source his tickets. So that's one positive for us. So whether you're out on the field or in the stands, Bryn, you're coming. The other thing I'd say is you'd like to think it is super rugby based, I think. But if there isn't enough super rugby based talent that wants to play or the All Blacks 15 are playing at the same time, man, grabbing guys of yourself or other players up in Japan, it's mouth watering. Like, I've loved the idea of an Anzac sort of team coming together. You know, even like a Michael Hooper coming back, a big moment against the Lions, maybe he captains, I'm not too sure. Like there's a lot of rabbit holes I could go down to, and we all know I love a good rabbit hole. I'm just going to need a couple of weeks to process, I think, Ross, as to how this may look.
And that would generate a lot of money. You bring a Richie Mwanga, you know, Brodie Retallick, or, you know, obviously a Hooper or a Corabetti that's playing over here in Japan, you know, and being able, or a Skelton that's obviously in France, for as an example. If you could bring all those guys to come back and play in the Anzac game, there'd be a lot of guys wanting to watch that game, a lot of people in general, I believe, in terms of money. So, but again, I'm not too sure what the criteria is going to be, but that'd be pretty mouth-watering for me if I was able to see guys from all over the world coming for that 1 week to play the British and Irish Lions as an Anzac. You know, what a great experience and a great, I guess, television that would be.
Would it overshadow the test matches? I don't know. You know, like, it's pretty exciting. It'd be pretty mouth-watering if you could pick from all over. Even like someone like a Sean McMahon. Like, I just don't think we saw his full talent in Australia.
And the Barbarians have set up a pretty good platform for that, Bryn. You've been involved in the Barbarians. Chip, have you played Barbarians too?
Sure have.
How long would you give this team to prepare for a bona fide Lions test?
Honestly, less is more when you've got all sorts of... Yeah. If you overthink it and you overprepare, like, you've just got to back the instincts, the quality of the players will come off.
Maybe just a few less headaches during the week?
You might even be able to bring... Ethan Roots there, and those other players that were mentioned.
If we get the opportunity, boys, to go to Adelaide, What an experience that would be.
We'll be supporting you, Bryn, out there. No problem at all.
Yeah, I'll be.
Justin Harrison, thank you, mate. Thank you, Gook, for sorting us out, mate. Really appreciate it.
This is basically a contract written with him, isn't it?
Send it to Sans 40, reckons.
Instagram and Twitter handle out there, Ross, on the bottom when we do the show. So,
no problem at all. No problem. We'll talk to our friends at Stan to help us out. All right. Okay. Well, I hope, Julian Bowie, that sorts you out. You send us a question talking about what we would do to select a Southern Hemisphere team. The answer is, don't know yet. But we tried. We'll get there.
Let's do it, though. Once we do know the criteria, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to do that. I reckon that would be interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be great to have a couple of teams out there.
And I suppose listeners, viewers, send in what they would pick.
Absolutely.
Be good to debate that.
Let's move on to Opiki. Now, Opiki's in an interesting place at the moment because it's become a very clear 1 and 2, then a gap, and then 3 and 4. The Manawa are on 19 points, the Blues on 14 points, then the Power back on 4, and Matatu back on 2 points. Is this really a two-horse race? I know there's the semi-final setup means all four are there, so it's almost like you're playing for a minor premiership and then you're playing for the title. But is this very much a two-horse race now, Jipper?
I think so. I think the Power have really punched above their weight. But unfortunately, just teams have sort of snuck away in that last 20 against them. The Matatu, man, they've fought hard, but it just hasn't gelled, you know? Like, it just hasn't... Their ability to finish off the opportunities they've had is still an issue. Like, they've actually been in position to win games, score points. So they're doing actually the bulk of the hard work to get into these positions, but just not being able to finish them off. So you'd have to think, based off the weekend, well, maybe the last 2 weekends, it's become more evident that it's probably the Manawa and the Blues. And I think it would be... you know, the Manawa in the box seat still. They're just so heavily stacked.
A 43-12 win over the Power, while the Blues got a 27-17 win over Matatu. Bryn, Matatu were right in that, though. Similar to the Crusaders, there are only a couple of moments that really switched that game.
Yeah, it is. And I think, look, you know, considering the way that they started, you know, being 17-8 up and putting a lot of pressure on and actually probably being able to score points, which they probably haven't been accustomed to during the duration of the competition. But I think when it came into the crunch in that last 20 minutes, you know, the Blues took it to another gear with Kotchul's try and Itunu's try to be able to take it a little bit out. And in turn, you know, you have to think at the Blues as well, you know, they had 23 turnovers and 14 handling errors and 11 penalties, you know. So talking around the Chiefs Manawa and the Blues, Ross, you know, they're going to play in a final between the Chiefs Manawa. And they're going to do those kind of mistakes that they did against Matatu. You know, they're probably not going to win a championship. So, yeah, I think but to come back to Matatu's point, yeah, this season it just hasn't seemed like they've been able to hold that momentum long enough and been able to score points in big moments. The handling errors has been a big part of that team. And I think especially in the last 10 minutes, you know, the rain obviously was powdering down at Eden Park. And, you know, both teams struggled with those conditions the last 10. But, yeah, it's been an area, Matatu, the handling areas have not been able to build pressure and score more points when they've had the momentum, especially you look at the first part of it, the last 2 games, not been able to score after high phase counts as well.
Ross, do you think in your editorial skills, you could get Vaholkolo's try with the swerve?
Yeah.
And I just think Rupini Thauthau and Bootha just came to mind. Like, I haven't seen that on Eden Park in a Blues jersey since. Maybe Joe Rokitoko showed a little bit of it, but my gosh, that was a try.
It's just raw.
The raw pace.
She ran a long way in comparison to the people trying to tackle her.
I tell you what, we interviewed her after the game and she does not take anything too seriously. You can see why she's very, very successful on her professional sporting stage, because she is just loving the game and loving, you know, sort of the opportunity to be out there.
Oh, she's a character for sure. Her social media is hilarious. But from what I'm told, she also is very, very driven, Bryn. Like, she wants to be the best player in the world. She might joke about everything else, but behind it all, she has that drive. And that kind of balance is probably dangerous. That's what makes her incredible.
Well, I think it's what makes you unique and authentic, doesn't it? I think, you know, when you see the social media element and being able to, I guess, show that fun side of very similar to a Ruby Tui and being able to show her personality, you know, it's only going to be able to make people like her that much more with the ability off the field. But on the field, man, she is the speed, power, and the ability even defensively as well with the breakdown, turnovers, and evolving that side of her game. Look, I'm not too sure with the Black Ferns when that's named, but you'd have to think that she'd be in the reckoning with the Ruby Tui, who's doing really well with the Chiefs Manawa. And obviously, the amount of talent and the outside backs that we have in Super Rugby Old Picky, it's great for the team. But Val Kolo herself, I love watching her, both on the field and obviously what she brings off the field with the entertainment side as well.
Geez, Ruby and her, that's two rather large personalities on the wings, if you'd had both of them. Let's talk a bit about Ruby, because she got another charge down on the weekend. These kickers need to start taking a few more metres. Like, they're so close when they're taking the kicks at goal, Bryn, that Ruby's getting there no problems.
Well, she's quick, isn't she? And I think with the where they are putting the ball, you probably just got to shorten up your run-up a little bit more now with how fast she is. But, yeah, look, I love watching Ruby Tui. Very similar to Vaho Kolo in terms of what, you know, how she plays and what she's like off the field. And I think what I love about watching Ruby is her effort areas. She's always in and around the ball, you know, whether it's a chip and chase or it's just chasing for a kick. That could be important in a game with those effort areas. But again, her work rate, I love her work rate. We've talked around her during that Black Ferns when they won the Rugby World Cup, how much work she does around off the ball, very similar to the men wingers of how much success they have at the moment. Yeah, look, I think it's great to have her being able to play Super Rugby Old Picky as well for a brand, and being able to see what she can do, how big she is in New Zealand rugby, and what she can bring for the competition. So, yeah, love watching her play.
I think the charge down explains her work rate. You know, like, they're ahead by miles. This doesn't have to do it, but she's got a standard. She lives to that no matter the moment, no matter the scoreboard. I think that sort of epitomises the way she plays the game.
Superb approach. Now, the Manawa, her Manawa, up against the Blues this week. Can you see, Bryn spoke a little bit about that before, about the slight differences there. Jip, do you see the Blues going to the Manawa and getting a win?
Where the point of difference has been is probably their goal line D is one for the Manawa. Like, actually, they held out the Blues, they held out Mustu under huge pressure, and then this rolling ball. Like, even though Luke O'Connor wasn't there, Saito got a number of tries off the back of it. So discipline and executing when you get the opportunities in the 22 will be the only way I believe the Blues will be able to win. But I think the Manawa will go on as favourites. But as I always say, I will pick the Blues. It's just I can't help myself.
Bryn Hall, you don't have that tie in this game. Where are you going?
Like I said, with the 23 turnovers, 14 handling errors and 11 penalties, if you're going to give the Chiefs Manawa that much ball, and especially penalties, in turn of being able to go to the line out more with Connor and Saito on the week, he got a couple of tries. It's going to be tough for the Blues. But what I do enjoy about the Blues, Chip, and you know, when you know sometimes when you've played against teams that have that offload game and been able to hold on to the ball and been able to get over the advantage line, it's really hard to be able to try and stop that. So if the Blues can do that for long periods of time, you know, they have a chance. But as I can see Jip smiling, he knows where I'm going with this. Well, I'm going to be picking the...
What I would say to that is, yes, their offline game is very strong, but maybe that level of turnovers is quite high because it's sometimes your biggest strength is your weakness, Bryn.
Yes.
One more ruck.
James, listen, Jip, the review. James Parsons, just one more ruck for the Blues girls.
One more ruck.
Coach Parsons has just solved the problem.
They would just literally say that's why he's here and not coaching.
Okay, now Matatu versus Poa, Bryn. You think that is a game that Matatu finally get up at home against the Poa?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, stats-wise and everything that we've touched on, they haven't done in the competition. But you'd have to think that, you know, if there is one game, it'd have to be against the Poa. You know, there were long periods of that game that, you know, look in the first half, especially, you know, when they got out to that 17-8 lead, they were up at the 50-minute mark. You know, it's just been able to come over the top and finish games in their last 20 minutes, which they haven't been able to do against the top teams. So, you know, I'll pick for Matatu with the fact that they have shown improvements in that 50 minutes against the Blues, but, you know, obviously the Poa are doing great things as well, but, you know, I'll pick Matatu to get their first one of the season.
Yep.
I think the toughest thing for the Matatu this season has been winning that physicality. And for the first time against the Chiefs Manor a couple of weekends ago, they had a higher game line percentage. So like they're trending in the right direction. I thought they were really strong against the Blues, who are a physical team. But the problem I have with the Poa is they have pretty much averaged 70% game line percentage. So physically, they are quite the challenge. So I will tend to lean towards the Poa for this weekend.
70% game line percentage. Is that more of a critique on the defence of the rest of the tournament than it is,
No, because no other team's doing it. Like they, especially in midfield, Shakira Baker, Monica Tangawai, like they are strong. They've got really powerful ball carriers in the forwards. Kaipo, Baker will, try to front up. But they just seem to have, the Poa seem to have big bodies just after big body. Like, I haven't seen 70% before. Like, in male-female game, it's quite astounding that you have that sort of physical dominance. And they haven't won more games. Like, that's the confusing thing in my head. From a statistical point of view, you would think you'd see that sort of dominance lead to a lot more points.
Mm. So we're usually looking at 30 to 40% gain line percentage?
Probably like 50 is probably good, like halfway. Like most of, if you look at Super Rugby Pacific, not many teams will get over 55%. If you look at Opiki, Poa, obviously at that sort of 70, but Manawa and the Blues can get up to 60. And just recently must have got to about 53%, but they are more down at 40. So 70 is pretty, that's 7 carries out of 10 you're getting across the game line. It's pretty impressive.
Right, let's move on to our Super Rugby tipping competition. Tipping.super.rugby, go to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League and join us to see how we're going at the moment. A bloke called Owen Carroll is doing very well. He's on 25 points, picked another 5 on the weekend. He knows how to do it. We're a little bit further down the table. unfortunately for Bryn, the Crusaders haven't helped him out. He would be right up the top if they were on form. There would be a completely different story. So let's have a look at the Crusaders at home against the Chiefs. Bryn, tell us, is it this week?
I don't think they can. Honestly, I just think with the injuries that they have had, and I'm not too sure what's happening with David Harvilli, another key cog in that team. If he's not playing, then it's makes it really hard. But very similar to Jip, what Liddy does with the Blues. I'll be backing the Crusaders, but my head tells me to go with the Chiefs. My heart goes with the Crusaders, so I'll be picking them.
I go the Chiefs purely because, to be fair, they've actually had the wood. The Crusaders, and particularly down south, they're probably the only team that has won down there recently. And Clayton McMillan certainly was unimpressed with too much of the fancy stuff, and he wants it a little bit more direct. And I'm looking at that Chiefs team, and if they're getting that message, there's probably just too much All Black experience in that side, and they'll get them on.
Right, yeah, watch out. They're coming through the Tars and the Rebels, Jipper. The Tars, I feel like they're a much better team than, 10th place suggests. Is this Rebels game the game where they start getting on a roll again?
Rebels are a tough one for me because they're averaging 28 points a game, so they can score points. But they're also averaging 23 points in the first half. It's every side. So if they can start well, they put themselves in the contest because when they're direct, they going into last weekend, they had the highest gain line percentage of Super Rugby. So they've got big bodies, they can get across, but their defence is what's letting them down. But you have to think after the fight and the grip that the Tars showed, I will pick the Tars.
I'm going to go with the Tars. I think, with the way that they showed against their Fijian draw game, I've been saying that it'd be pretty tough travelling back home, actually. I'll go with the Waratahs. I know they've had a tough draw, but there's enough there, I think, with what I've seen and how they play. They'll get the result against the Rebels.
Now, the draw got up against the Tars last weekend, Bryn, and They're facing the Force this week, who, geez, beat the Reds out of nowhere.
Yeah, obviously, no, the Force, they had a great start. Obviously, they're getting their first one of the year. But look, I think any time you're going to go to Fiji, it's tough to get the results. So I think McBurn will be pretty hard around their review and the way that the Waratahs were able to come back in that second half. But yeah, I think it'll be a step too far for our friends from the Force. And I reckon the dominance in Fiji will continue.
I think it was more about the Reds than the Force last week, personally. So I'll go with the draw.
I'm presuming you're both going to go Blues versus MP?
Yes.
Yeah, Moana Pacifica looking like they were struggling really badly against the Brumbies. Now, let's talk about the Brumbies versus the Reds. It's in Queensland. The Reds poor last week, the Brumbies hitting their stride, Jip.
Reds.
Tough one.
I almost feel like that game played the Brumbies back into form. They're back in the mixer now as a genuine contender.
Oh, I'll go the Brumbies. I'll go the opposite. I think...
come on, Les Kiss. Do the job, boy.
Brumbies are coming to put a form after that win. So, yeah, I'll go the Brumbies over the Reds.
And last up, the Landers at home against the Canes. Are the Canes continuing their winning run, Jip?
I think so. I do want to just take a moment to give Duplessis Corifi a shout-out. Well, that performance the other night was just phenomenal. 15 tackles, 15 carries, 30 rucks. You know, he could barely walk off the park. He is making a big statement for higher honours. And I think those sorts of performances, squad depth I've got, it'll be a step too far for the Landers.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the Hurricanes. I think the biggest thing for that game is actually going to be who's going to be in that 23 for the Hurricanes with the amount of games that these teams have played in the last four or five rounds. So it'll be interesting to see what that mix is going to be. So, yeah, I think the Hurricanes will continue that the hot form that they've had. But, you know, as it can be shown, you know, the Highlanders, they're a team that can stay in it. They obviously got out to a big deficit against the Chiefs, but, you know, found a way back. And, you know, I think if you look at the efficiency of the Highlanders in that first, you know, 60 to 70 minutes of getting into the 22 metre zone that Jip talked to, when they were actually to be able to get in there for that last 10 minutes and score points, they were able to do that. So the effectiveness of the 22 metre zone for the Highlanders will be crucial going against the Hurricanes on the weekend.
That is going to be a great game to watch. You can catch all of the rugby this weekend on Sky Sport. Of course, you can catch Aotearoa Rugby Pod on YouTube. You can catch us on all of the Sky platforms. You can catch us on Rugby Pass and Rugby Pass TV. We'll see you all again next week. James Parsons from Adelaide, thank you very much. Bryn Hall out of Japan, thank you very much. And thank you all for watching the show. Mā te wā.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.